The Fleischmann's Yeast Hour, directed by Rudy Valley. This is Rudy Valley and Company. By a not altogether unusual coincidence, most of our acts this week seem to have just arrived from somewhere else. Just arrived from Hollywood is Colin Clive, who as Leo G. Carroll will be heard in a one-act play by John Balderston. Also just off the trail from Beverly Hills is Willie Howard. Having just finished Rose of the Rancho for Paramount, Willie is reunited with Brother Gene for our show tonight. Just off the boat from Southampton is James Hilton, the young Englishman who wrote Goodbye, Mr. Chip, and Lost Horizon. Just in from Chicago, Kingsley and Kate, stars of the Chez Paris Review and the hit of the Actors Federation benefit I had the pleasure of staging last Sunday evening. The only local boy in our midst is Lou Lair, whose Dutch dialect ornaments your news reel features. Due to unforeseen circumstances, Billy House will not be on the program tonight. But he will be in the very, very near future. Put them all together, and the hour contains Lou Lair, Kingsley and Kate, James Hilton, William Eugene Howard, Leo G. Carroll, and Colin Clive. It was my privilege to witness the New York opening of George White's Scandals a few nights ago, the Scandals of 1936. Embryonic as the opening always is, before White brings a show into town, he will undoubtedly present a scandal equal to any of his past successes. The outstanding features beyond the usual comedy of Bert Lauer and Cliff Edwards were three young German boys, the Veer brothers. Melodically, the Henderson and Yellen score is distinguished by three very tuneful and lyrical compositions which we present this evening. I'm the Fellow Who Loves You. Anything can happen, and life begins at Sweet 16. You are listening now to Life Begins at Sweet 16.
That simple truth that nature can't be fooled, and she has wisely ruled that life begins at sweet 16. Suddenly, every Jack and Jill in it find a thrill in it. Love appears upon the scene. One, two, three, and it pops your heart until then you start into it. Life opens up its book of mysteries deep and dark. You learn why Noah took two of everything on the ark. Oh, life begins at sweet 16. From then on, it's a high hole, the merry oh, and everything is very okay.
Life begins at sweet 16. Suddenly, every Jack and Jill in his find a thrill in his love appears upon the scene. One, two, three, and it pops your heart and you then you start into years. Life opens up its book of mystery deep and dark. You learn why Noah took two of everything on the ark. Life begins at 16. From then on, it's a high hole, the merry-o, and everything is very okay.
Presenting meeting Lou Lair, the Fox Movie Tone dialectician, one of the best-known voices of the day. When Movie Tone has a news feature about a hippopotamus giving birth to twins, or a couple of low-comedy wrestlers biting off each other's ears, or monkeys doing almost anything, her Dr. Lou Lair is called in to do the description in that well-known Dutch brogue of his. This is her doctor in person.
Greetings, Parsi-Walsies. My chest is certainly smelling with pride to redress you this way over a nation-long hookover. Mr. Valley said it to me last October, or was it October? No, it was November. He said, Dribblepuss... That's my maiden name. I maiden that on the newsreel. He said, Dribblepuss, why don't you spoke it in the microphone, one of those sweet tales of the fairies? But your Uncle Ludwig used to told you when you was a young imbecile. I said, sure, it's a pleasure, Rudy, if I ain't too imperspiration. And here is it. Uncle Ludwig loves children, especially boys and girls. And every night before he went down to the Turnverein to get the usual load on, he would gather us Kitzleys around him and commence the lion, stories. Sometimes he mixed it up like Hassenpfeffer, all the stories, because Uncle Ludwig was very absent-headed. You know how absent-headed was it? Why, one day when he was hanging a picture on the wall in the dining room, every time he hit the nail with a hammer, he said, come in. So up he mixes it, Hansel and Gretel, the three pigs, Goldie Hare, and all the others. It was preposterous. Sometimes the words get catched in my eyes, and I can't see what I'm spoking here. One night, Uncle Ludwig told us about little red riding pans. I don't remember it, but here's exactly the way he said it. Once upon a, believe it or don't, little red riding pants were slitching through Central Park, where the trees are in the woods, with a basket full of wiener schnitzel for the grandmother, grandmother to you little mugs. As she slipped along, she was very happy with spring, the smell of flowers, and the exhaust fumes from the motor buses. So she singed that Peggy Joy song called Thanks a Million. Red riding pants were filled with exuberance. It was beautiful there. Sitting on a bench behind an old chestnut tree, where the radio jokes come from, was Mr. I'm a Wolf, who was a bear in Wall Street and a tiger in sheep's clothing. He heard Red riding pants tearing off the zinging. So he walked around the tree and he said, hello, Tootsie Queen Puff baby. Whither do you wander with a wiener? Red Riding Pants knew her Eddie Carey, so she hit him with an Emily Post. So, I don't remember meeting your acquaintance. This made Mr. Wolf was he mad? Reaching up into a bird's nest, he took out an egg, broke it open, hopped into the yellow, and rode lickety-splinter to Red Riding Pants' grandmother's. It took Red Riding Pants much longer to get to the Bronx, because every motor car she thumbed ran out of gas in the best places. Finally, she got there. Knocking on the bell, she was surprised by the janitor who was janitoring the empty apartment. Oh, old Red Riding Pants, I thought you was my grandmother. Well, thought again, said the janitor. Granny doesn't live here anymore. Just knocked Red Riding Pants for a row of brick chimneys. She cried, why? Who? Where? You said it, said the janitor. Me too. And did she leave this apartment loud or awful? When did she skip the gutter, goggled Red Riding Pants. A hell of an hour ago, said the janitor. A fella with a long snoot and big eyes, ears, nose, and throat came to see her. I listened at the doorknob and he proposed. Proposed what? Cried Red Riding Pants. Proposed a lot of things. Especially that they get married and your grandmother should turn over all her oil wells stuck to him. Stuck is right, said the Red Riding Pants. Please, said the janitor. This wolf and a two-pan goose made the mistake of giving your grandmother a drink of schnapps. That's water, too. Then two more. All of a sudden, I heard a terrible racket, like the building coming down, or Primo Kinnear doing a tap dance. The door banged open, the long suit fella sailed out into the street, the empty bottles sailed after him, and your grandmother turned hand-screen down the avenue, following Whoopee! Where did she say she was going, cried Red Riding Pants. To play fullback for Notre Dame, said the janitor. And so, little children, spoke Uncle Ludwig, never throw rocks at your grandmother, because she may have Red writing pen. Auf Wiedersehen.
Theater frequently includes certain people of importance. Tonight, our listener of honor is a front-rank novelist, the young Englishman who wrote Goodbye, Mr. Chips, and Lost Horizon, Mr. James Hilton. As you might expect from his work, Mr. Hilton is a very charming young fellow, a trifle shy, like most writers I've met, but willing enough to meet you. May I introduce, then, Mr. James Hilton. Mr. Hilton, I think you're the only novelist we've ever had up here in front of our microphone. What do interviewers usually ask you first?
For some strange reason, Mr. Valley, they always begin by asking me how long I'm going to be in this country. I don't know the answer to that one. Then they ask, what do you think of New York? And I haven't been here long enough to find out.
Yes, I'm still trying to make up my own mind about New York, Mr. Hilton, after 7 years. It's a pretty confusing place, isn't it?
Most terribly confusing. I've never been rushed about so before. For example, a police escort brought me here from my dinner table. Sirens blowing full blast, no regard for red lights. You know, they never do things like that for writers in England.
This is indeed a remarkable country, Mr. Hilton. Do you expect to visit Hollywood, by the way?
Yes, I'm looking forward rather fearfully to that experience. You see, they're going to make a picture for Lost Horizon.
Who's going to play the lead? Conway is the name of the character, isn't it?
Yes, that's correct. I believe they've signed Ronald Coleman to play the role.
Well, that should be fine. And I'd like to suggest Dudley Diggs for Mr. Chips, if they make that one. Speaking of Mr. Chips, did you have any particular English school in mind as a setting for your story?
Not exactly. Brookfield is a composite of 5 or 6 schools, including my own, which was the Lee School at Cambridge.
I think I read somewhere that you're a newspaper man. Is that correct, Mr. Hilton?
Yes, in a way. For a number of years, up till a few weeks ago, I wrote a column in the London Daily Telegraph and one in the Irish Independent of Dublin.
Like Walt Winchell's column?
No, I'm afraid my stuff, do you call it? I'm afraid my stuff wasn't nearly as absorbing as Mr. Winchell's gossip. But I think Mr. Winchell would agree with me that it's a great relief not to be under the necessity of turning out a regular column.
Mr. Hilton, everyone over here is deeply concerned about the danger of another European war. And judging by Lost Horizon, you believe that another world war would destroy our civilization entirely. Is that right?
Well, of course, I don't know, Mr. Valley. We are desperately worried about the war situation at home. One can almost feel the heavy cloud of anxious dread that hovers over Europe. And the absence of that feeling is perhaps the first thing one notices here in America. Your people are apprehensive, I know. But the problem is a great deal closer to us. War happens, I think, when a nation feels that it's strong enough not to fear war. I'm afraid there are 1 or 2 countries in that state of mind in Europe right now. As to the result of another war, who knows? Very often, disaster sweeps close to a man or a nation without striking. We can hope, and that's about all.
I'm sure that every one of our millions of listeners joins in that hope, Mr. Hilton. And that hope, I think, brings your country and mine very close together.
Yes, Mr. Valley, and I wish there was some way I could bring to your listeners a real sense of our common feeling, our kinship in everyday life. There's been an election in England today, and most people in the cities there will be waiting up either to give a few cheers in the street or to listen to the results on the radio, just as you would do here. So at this moment, which is past midnight at home, think of Piccadilly Circus blazing away with its sky signs, nearly but not quite as brilliant as Broadway, and think too of some little English village where a man going home late after an evening with his friends, calls to them through the darkness, as I do now to you, good night.
Rudy Valley speaking, out on the other side of the chimes. You have heard Lou Lair, comedian, James Hilton, novelist. The Fleischman's East Hour continues. We bring you Willie and Eugene Howard, Colin Clive and Leo G. Carroll, Kingsley and Case. Evelyn Case and Herbert Kingsley came to us from Chicago, where they have been entertaining at the Chez Paris. Coming late in the show at our vaudeville artist benefit Sunday night, they brought a rather jaded audience to attention and subsequent cheers with their new version of Frankie and Johnny.
Pull up your chairs and listen to me. Here is a tale of infidelity. It happened to Frankie, it happened to Johnny, and it might happen to you and me. Every night she'd call him
Johnny.
Every night she'd call him
Johnny.
Frankie.
Johnny.
Frankie.
Johnny.
Frankie.
Johnny.
Johnny were lovers. Naughty how they were in love. Swore to be true to each other, true as the stars above.
It was my man. It was my man. But it does me wrong.
But Johnny, he couldn't be faithful. No matter how hard he tried. Once when she looked through her window, she caught him with Nellie Bly.
She loved Nellie Bly. Nellie Bly. Nellie Bly.
Funny thing called love, and who can solve its mystery?
Why is that it makes a fool of
you're a
me?
Fool. You're a fool.
A fool.
You're a fool.
A fool.
You're a fool.
A fool.
A fool. A fool. A fool. A fool. Picked up her 44. She went to where Johnny was sitting. Right at that, shot him through the door.
He was my man, but he done me wrong.
No good to go. You're gonna miss him so. When winter winds begin to blow, the ground is covered up with snow. You'll think of me. You'll be back with your loving man. You're gonna miss him hard in the days to come. 'Cause you're a fool. You're a fool. You're a fool. You're a fool. A fool. A fool. A fool. A fool.
Warner Brothers' great Navy hit, Don't Give Up the Ship. Howard. Separated last summer when Willie went west to make Rose of the Rancho for Paramount, they are reunited here on the stage of the Variety Theater for their first appearance since Willie's return to New York. Back together again, Willie and Eugene Howard.
Hello, Willie. How are you?
Oh, I feel fine. I'm fit as a strudel and raring to go.
Yes, sir.
Well, it's certainly good to see you.
Mm-hmm. Say, you know, you haven't seen me so long, I almost forgot what I look like.
Absolutely.
But why didn't you write me from Hollywood, Willie? Didn't you get my letter?
Which one? The one that you sent me? I sent you $100?
Yeah.
I didn't get it.
What? You didn't get it?
No.
Maybe I sent it to the wrong address.
Maybe sent the wrong fellow. I don't know. Two different places.
I suppose now that you're a big moving picture star and making a lot of money, you won't have anything to do with your old friends.
You said it.
I see. Success hasn't changed you a bit.
That's right.
Well, tell me about your first day in Hollywood. How did you come out at the studios?
Head first.
No. How did you make out on the set?
Were you nervous? Boy, was I nervous. I was so nervous that I accidentally put baking powder in my makeup.
Well, what happened?
I broke out in biscuits.
Well, tell me, what pictures were you in besides Rose of the Rancho?
Oh, I was in The Crusade.
You mean that big costume picture?
That's right.
Well, that's funny. I saw The Crusade and I didn't recognize you. What were you made up as?
A Christian.
Yeah. Well, what did you do in the picture?
Well, you know, in the big scene, we're about to kill the girl, and the hero rushes in to save her with a big sword in his hand.
Yeah. Were you in that scene?
Sure, but I was hiding.
Yeah, oh, you were, eh?
Yeah.
Well, while you were in Hollywood, did you visit any of the other studios?
Yeah, I saw him make that new picture with Gary Cooper.
What was it called?
Peter Kibitzer.
Peter.
I also saw him make that Shakespearean picture, that Midsummer Ice Cream.
Midsummer Ice Cream?
Yeah. You know the one with the English actor in it, that Cockney?
What Cockney?
James Cockney.
Oh. Seriously, though, Willie. You know, Shakespeare was one of our greatest writers.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you believe it? Sometimes he used to spend 6 months on one paragraph.
That's nothing. Don't you remember when Uncle Morris spent 5 years on one sentence?
Yeah. Oh, never mind that. But tell me, have you read all of Shakespeare's plays?
Oh, sure, unless he's written something lately.
What? Written something lately?
You know. Okay.
Why, Shakespeare's been dead for 300 years.
No.
Yes.
How time flies.
Yeah, go. I gave up.
Yes.
Now tell me, what's new in Hollywood?
About half the husbands.
No. I mean, what's the latest dope in Hollywood?
Dope?
Yeah.
Joe Penner.
Oh. You don't understand. You know any news, any gossip?
Let me see. Oh, yes. Right now, Ben Bunny is making a new picture.
Really?
Yes.
What kind of a picture?
Well, in this picture, the old maestro goes in the train and becomes a jockey.
Who did he ride?
Walter Winchell.
Yeah, go.
Now, tell me, Gene, what's new in New York?
Well, for one thing, a new law has been passed.
Yes?
The anti-noise law.
No.
Yes.
Let's get out of here, quick.
Hey, wait a minute. Come back here. Where are you going?
What kind of law said they passed?
The anti-noise law.
Oh, I thought you said anti-nose.
Yeah, go. No. The mayor is trying to keep the city quiet.
Yes?
Why, you even have to put a muffler on your car.
That's easy. My wife will knit one.
Well, now that we're back together, Willie, what are we going to do? How about playing a little vaudeville?
Now, I'm tired of vaudeville. Besides, there isn't any. The last theater we played, the place was so empty, the ushers had to help out with the coughing. Oh,
yeah.
My God, it was bad.
And didn't you think the acoustics were bad?
Yeah, I never did think of much of those foreign acts. Anyway.
Oh, well, you know, people are more interested in radio nowadays.
Yeah?
By the way, how's that little radio I gave you working?
It's too small. Say, do you know that radio is so small, I can only get 2 of the 4 Mills brothers?
2 of the 4 Mills brothers?
Yeah.
Which 2 do you get?
Amos and Andy.
I suppose you can only get 2 of the 3 Boswell sisters.
Yeah, might and not.
Yeah, well, what do you get on a Jack Benny program?
Major Bose.
Well, what do you get on a Major Bose program?
The gun.
Serious now, Willie. What part did you play in Rose of the Rancho?
Well, I played Pancho Spiegelglass, the lonesome cowboy.
Well, what made you lonesome?
Well, partner, hitch up your cayuse to yonder chuck wagon. I'm going to tell you just how it happened.
I'm a lone cowboy and I'm happy all the day on the skies of blue. So a hi yippee yippee and a yippee yippee yay, I'm a tilly hilly dilly buckaroo. Buckaroo. There's a lone sweet girl on the road to Santa Fe, and she loves me true. So a hi yippee yippee and a yippee yippee yay, I'm a very, very lucky buckaroo. Buckaroo. For the world I'm leaving for a spell on the road that leads to joy. So I yippee-yippee-yay, and I won't be a lone cowboy. Won't be a lone cowboy. There's a girl in California, yay, beside the blue Atlantic. Yes, I got my ocean wrong, but do I know right from wrong? Cause the girl in California has got me so romantic that I don't know day from night, but I know that she's all right. She hasn't much of a figure, her brain is a little bit slow, but her father is fast on the trigger, and so I love her so. Oh, a girl in California has got me nearly frantic. I admit she's doggone sweet, but the way that girl can eat. I've got a horse and he's my pal. I've got three cows in my corral, and soon I'll have to be that gal in California.
Novelty song featured in the picture starring Lily Pons, I Dream Too Much, is called The Jockey on a Carousel. We present now the eminent English screen star, Mr. Colin Clive. You've seen Mr. Clive most recently in The Man Who Broke the Bank at Monte Carlo, and as the monster-making scientist in the Frankenstein pictures. He is in New York now rehearsing for Gilbert Miller's production of the London hit Libel, scheduled to open here during Christmas week. You will hear Mr. Clive tonight in a remarkable one-act play by John Balderston, author of Berkeley Square. Appearing with him is one of New York's most expert players, Leo G. Carroll. Colin Clive with Leo G. Carroll in The Other Place by John Balderston.
The scene. A lonely mountain road in Wales. A high-powered motor car is seen traveling toward the... traveling at terrific speed for such a road. Faster and faster it comes, cutting sharply around curves, swaying from side to side. The man at the wheel of that car is either a desperate fool or else he's bent on killing himself. There's a sharp curve ahead now. He'll never make it. He's
going to crash. You crash. Look out. There he goes.
Strange. Very strange. Why, a moment ago, I was in a car on my way to St. David's. Or was it only a moment ago? The road was... the road. That tree. Oh, Lord, I remember now. The car skidded on a curve and... good heavens.
Faded one wish, sir.
And what's that?
Eternal youth. I've taken 30 years from your age, sir.
Oh, so I'm 28 again, eh?
Forever, sir.
Oh, that's fine. And you? You ought to take orders from me.
Not only take them, sir. Execute them.
I see. You're part of my reward. Would you mind if I call you Clarkson? My old butler, you know. Queer place. Not what I expected, this. But what about the halos and the harps?
Well, they often ask about them at first, sir, before they quite understand. Here you are, sir.
Oh. Just as advertised. But I don't know how to play this thing. Well, I suppose I've got to learn.
Not at all, sir. You've got to do nothing here, sir, excepting whatever you please.
Oh, that's fine. Well, is this my celestial mansion? Seems a bit bare, Clarkson.
Whatever furnishings, pictures, or hangings you desire, sir, shall be installed at once.
Why, I can have whatever I like, regardless of expense.
In this, as in all things, sir, you speak, and I obey.
Well, absolutely everything?
I'm subject only, sir, to restrictions imposed by the nature of this place.
And what are they?
You must wish for nothing unpleasant or painful for yourself or others. Pain, suffering, struggle cannot exist on our plane.
Just as advertised. Well, how about some food? I'm as hungry as a devil.
Please, sir. Never say that. Not here. What will you have for luncheon, sir?
Oh, I'll leave it to you. Something filling. Can I smoke up here?
A Corona, Corona, sir? Here you are, sir.
Well, of course, you're all teetotalers here. Yes?
Will you try some Veuve Clicquot 1906? And before that, a Chateau Lafitte 74? And a Chartreuse with your coffee, sir?
Well, I'm damned.
These expletives, sir. In this place, sir.
Oh, I beg your pardon, yes, sir. I should say I'm blessed. You know, I never expected to get a drink if I was saved.
Luncheon is served, sir.
Clarkson, take this halo away, will you? It tickles my ears.
Time passes, and eternity lies ahead, just around the corner.
Best lunch I ever ate. Quick stuff, that ambrosia, or was it manna? This is what I call life.
Eternity, sir?
Oh, yes. And this furniture, these paintings, are these things originals? How much is this stuff in this room worth?
There's nothing here to buy, sir, since you've only to ask to receive. So we can't speak of things here in terms of money.
Oh, yes, of course, that would be true. Then all these masterpieces aren't worth a dollar. Anybody can have these things. This is good.
Yes, sir. But if you'd like money, I can bring you any number of millions. In gold or notes, just as you prefer.
Well, what good is it if it won't buy anything?
Oh, none, sir. But still some gentlemen, when they first come, like to finger it. So we give it to them just as we give jewels to a lady.
But every other woman can have stones just as fine.
Yes, sir. And she soon gets tired of queen's necklaces.
Yes, I can see she would. Do you have movies and theatres?
The originals of all plays, films and music are here. Performances take place whenever you wish, sir. You select the programs yourself.
Why, it's even better than the advertisements promised. You know, I've always been so tired in the evenings to enjoy a show. I might make up for it here.
You'll have plenty of time to do that, sir.
Indeed. Oh, marriage and giving in marriage. What about that, Clarkson?
I understand, sir. I'll collect a harem this afternoon. Your specifications, sir.
Oh, come, come, Clarkson. Come, come, come. I'm a good Christian. Nothing like that.
Just as you wish, sir.
But if you could introduce me to some nice girls, you know, just in a quiet, friendly way.
Well, certainly, sir. So stupid of me. I had forgotten that you were an Anglo-Saxon. What do you wish to do now, sir?
See the sights, Clarkson. I've not been outside my mansion yet, you know. I want to look over your town or country or whatever you call it.
You shall see the great palaces of the thrones, powers, principalities, the temples of jasper and emerald, the streets of gold and the gates of pearl.
Oh, I thought they were figures of speech.
Oh, no. Not here, sir.
Well, come along and show me. Oh, and Clarkson, you might tear out all this French furniture. Let's have some Italian old masters and fittings to match.
Which school do you prefer, sir?
Oh, I don't know one school from the other, but get me the best from all schools.
As you would say on Earth, sir, the most expensive?
That's it. Market price sets the value. But all this stuff up here has no price. That's what beats me.
It's beyond price, sir.
Well, what are you going to show me now? Will bowl me over. Eh, Clarkson?
All our guests are very much impressed, sir, for the first few days.
Time passes. A year or so, as we measure time here on Earth. The gentleman of the motor car is seen reclining on a heavily gilded couch, his feet cocked up on two crouching golden cupids. He wearily throws a crossword puzzle to the floor.
Clarkson, I wish you were here.
You wished for me, sir?
Clarkson, these ladies I meet are getting on my nerves. Too stunning, too clever, too charming, too obliging. What are their names again?
Helen, Thais, Cleopatra, Madame du Barry, Lady Hamilton.
Yes. I've read about two of them, but what made you pick them out for me?
You gave me no direction, sir, so I applied what you said about your interior decorating.
What are you talking about?
The best from all schools. And the most expensive.
Well, this evening I want to meet some ordinary women. This everlasting perfection pulls, Clarkson. It pulls. You know, Clarkson, what I'd really like is some work.
Whatever you wish, sir. What kind shall I provide?
Well, how can I work here? What is work?
In this case, sir, something to amuse you, sir.
Oh, that isn't work. Work is trying to do or reach out or get something you want. I used to work for money. But whether it's money, a woman, a bird, or a mountaintop you're after, you must want what you work for. Now, when I want anything, I get it at once. Therefore, I can't work for it. Nothing to work for, no work. So I must live through eternity.
Oh, very well reasoned, sir. That's how the philosophers talk for the first 10 years or so after they come.
And what do they do after that?
What the rest do, sir?
Exist. Well, do people in the...
I don't know, sir. I've not been there since souls began to arrive.
Oh, you have been there, then?
Not for 40,000 years, sir. And then I left in a hurry.
Really? You know, Clarkson, there's one thing left that really would pick me up.
Only one, sir. Already?
I'd like to see the world again. I couldn't go back just for a visit.
The only thing you can't do here, sir, is leave. But these will serve you just as well. With these binoculars, you can see the world. They're very remarkable glasses, sir, specially designed to gratify the strongest human passion.
And what is that?
A curiosity. You can pick out the star Earth, then look at a continent, then focus down to a city, then to a house, and then see right through the walls and into every room. Many arrivals here are amused for years with these, sir.
Give them here. Oh, I know a lot of people down there whose private lives I like to investigate. Give them to me, Clarkson, quickly. Give them.
Time passes, and eternity is young. We see the gentleman of the motor car walking impatiently back and forth across a marble pavement, curbed with gold.
I want you. Don't pop so much, man.
Very well, sir.
Clarkson, I'm bored. Bored to extinction.
Not extinction, sir. Not here.
I'm sick to death of this eternal life.
That paradox has escaped you before, sir.
I've always worked at something. By giving him whatever I want, you prevent me from working for it.
You made that clear before, sir. It can't be helped.
Well, what am I to do today? I'm tired of everything.
Of watching the world, sir? So soon?
Those cursed binoculars. Clarkson, I never thought myself a saint down there, but what I've seen since you gave me those glasses, things seem all right when you look at a crowd in the street, at the outside of things, or when you see inside. Oh. Well, why don't you suggest something? Is this my reward to be bored to the end of time?
Strictly speaking, sir, there is no end to time. The phrase we use here, sir, is from everlasting to everlasting.
Everlasting fiddlesticks. I want you to tell me what to do.
More ladies, sir?
There's nothing in that, Clarkson, when you only have to wish.
But any uncertainty would mean you mightn't get what you want. And what you desire, that you must have.
Why must I?
Order, sir, from General Headquarters.
Well, I call it rotten. It's driven me to drink, that's what it has. Well, the trouble is, I can't get drunk.
Well, if you were drunk, you would be ill afterwards. You'd have headaches.
But I want to be ill. I want headaches.
There can be no illness, no aches, sir, as I made clear to you when you came.
Well, what is there left, then? What are you standing there for like one of those frozen heathen statues? Suggest something.
Well, please don't be angry with me, sir. I carry out my orders, sir. My orders are to do the very best for you I can. I'm in the same boat myself, sir.
And you're bored here, too?
Infinitely, sir.
You don't show it?
Well, I believe I did, sir, for the first few thousand years.
Good. Good Lord.
You mustn't say that, sir, here.
But there must be something left for me to do.
Well, you might experiment to find more appropriate clothes, sir.
Well, how often have I told you that I won't wear wings or nightgowns? This suit and this hat are all I have to remind me of life where I sweated and was kicked about and was as happy even if I didn't know it. And what's more, when these clothes wear out, you've got to replace them.
Very good, sir.
Why, I was wearing this suit from my motor crash, and you asked me to give it up. My last real experience, my last thrill. You can't imagine what agony I felt from my crushed thigh before I fainted. My last pain.
Well, I don't know what to propose, sir. But when there's anything you want...
There is pain, that's what it is. I want to suffer.
Well, I'm afraid you can't do that here, sir.
Well, I'm sick of heaven.
Sick of heaven, sir?
Well, I want to want things I can't have.
A contradiction in terms, sir.
But I can't stand this confounded everlasting bliss.
We all have to stand it, sir.
Well, whatever the devils do to me, it can't be as bad as this. I want to go to hell.
Why, sir, wherever do you think you are? This is hell, sir.
Ellen were asked which song they think would be the most outstanding in their score for George White's Candles of 1936, I think they would award the blue ribbon to this one. I'm the Fellow Who Loves You.
Much less for parvenu blood. You're of the upper classes. I'm of the lowly masses. I'm gonna have my say anyway. I am an ordinary guy, just getting by. But I dare to tell you, I'm the fellow who loves you. You, living on the avenue, among the who's who. I don't care, I tell you, I'm the fellow who loves you. Your folks have been pillars of society for hundreds of years. My folks were the everyday variety. They didn't have a pot to cook in. Maybe I haven't got a look in. Still, it gives me the grandest thrill. Is he plain Bill? Telling gorgeous you that I'm the fellow who loves you. Been pillars of society for hundreds of years. My folks were the everyday variety. They didn't have a pot to cook in. Maybe I haven't got a look in still. It gives me the grandest thrill. Gives me plain bill. Telling gorgeous that I'm the fellow who loves you.
Tomorrow, Friday, the Yankees and I, with our entire company, begin a six-day engagement at the downtown RKO Theater, Detroit, Michigan. This is an effort part of the theater to bring back vaudeville and flesh entertainment. We'll be followed, our engagement will be followed by many other fine, outstanding performances we hope. We look forward to seeing all our Detroit friends. Next week, another four-star variety review, now in the case of intensive preparation. This is Rudy Valley bidding you all good night.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.